Is it fair to say Keane Lynch is your hurler of the year?
I just say, Keane, here's the trophy. That's it. I wouldn't even give three names. I just say Keane Lynch is hurler of the year. And like, it was so good, give it to him next year.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
But I'm delighted to say Jonathan Courtney is with us, the man behind the shirt. Jonathan, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's the response been like to the shirt so far?
There's the usual online debates about shirts when they come out, bit of vitriol, bit of people loving it as well. So it's kind of that usual mix. But I think on this occasion, it's really, and I don't mean this in any sort of patronising way, obviously, but there's a little bit of education in this because not a lot of people understand that Ireland actually originally wore blue.
Tell us about that, will you? Because that is the bit that everybody's like, ah, right, where did this come from? And it turns out we're going back to our roots.
Yeah, exactly. So in 1880, give you a bit of a history lesson here, I suppose, but in 1880, the IFA was formed out of Belfast, which looked after football and soccer across the country of Ireland at the time. And in 1921, obviously post the War of Independence and just approaching the Civil War, there was a lot of tension around the country for obvious reasons. So the 1921 Cup final was between Glenavon and Shelburne, and it was in Belfast, and it was a draw. So it went to a replay, and Shelburne insisted that it was in Dublin, and Glenavon refused to travel. So the Southern Irish teams at the time decided enough was enough, and they were going to break away and form their own association. So that would have been the likes of Shamrock Rovers, Athlone, Bohemians, St. James's Gate, Brooklyn, a few teams like that at the time. So they set up, they applied in, so that was 1921, and then we had the Civil War. They applied to FIFA to be recognised as the Football Association of Ireland Free State in 1923. And this all predated, of course, World Cups and European Championships. So the premier tournament at the time would have been the Olympic Games. So the Olympics in Paris in 1924 was where Ireland made their first international game or debut, if you like. And that was a game against Bulgaria. And Ireland wore St. Patrick's blue shirts, kind of cream shorts, and they actually wore black socks. And in a kind of funny twist of fate, Bulgaria were the ones wearing green, white, green.
Right. I've never heard of the black socks before. Is that something that might make a comeback too?
No, we thought that was, I took a bit of a view on that it's not the most appealing to the eye, let's say. So I've kind of changed that to a St. Patrick's blue sock with a nice green turnover and white stripe in it, which you might be able to see over my shoulder there under the Jason McAteer ball.
Tell us a little bit about how does this actually work? When do you start trying to excavate the history to decide that this is going to be something that we can bring back to pay testimony to the history, but also that's actually going to work for people today?
Look, obviously it's the FAI centenary, so that's what the lens of which we were trying to look through. So you go back, and I have from the FAI's 75th anniversary, they did a really nice book which was released and gifted around and stuff. So you can go back and you get some of the early information there. You can go back to one or two of the historians like Gary Spain and stuff like that, who sent me on images of that 1924 programme. And you can see the team lineup, obviously, but you can also see the kits listed under the fixture on the team lineup pages and stuff like that. So you go through all these ideas to set up the start of the design, if you like. And obviously, blue was going to be an integral part of that for obvious reasons. And there's no better time than to do it with a centenary. There's also, it's probably fair to say that in terms of the current FAI crest, it's probably not the most universally loved crest by the fans. There's a bit more of a grow back towards the Shamrock or maybe the 88 crest and stuff like that. So what we wanted to do was concentrate on really bringing a strong, bold Shamrock back into the design this time. So, as you know, people think, oh, you drew a Shamrock, well done. There's a bit more to it than that. You go and look at literally thousands of different Shamrocks that have been used over the years, and then you got to remember that most people, when they're designing a Shamrock or designing something, they're designing for paper or for print. So you got to look at it slightly differently when you're going to use it on apparel and clothing. So we've done this kind of, I think it's beautiful anyway, really nice Shamrock that kind of splits into leaves in the middle, and the threads go different ways, and it gives this kind of layering 3D effect. And the Shamrock itself is sitting on what's called an applique, which is a kind of heavier twill material. And then it's embroidered on with gold, which would have been kind of similar to what was done at the time. But we've even tried to go to the detail of the embroidery itself, embroidering that on, we've kind of used an older technique. So it doesn't look perfect. And that's obviously in tune with what would have been done at the time. And so it's not meant to look perfect, but it's meant to look authentic.
Okay. The conversation around the crest is interesting. Are we transitioning back, do you think, in the future to one of those crests that is kind of paying, again, homage to the 88, the 90s, those crests?
I think that's obviously a decision for the FAI to make, and that's a whole total rebrand situation. And certainly we haven't been made aware of any conversations that are you know, that they're looking at a change in their corporate identity. So personally, I'd like to see some sort of change at some time, at some stage. I certainly wouldn't be the biggest fan of the current crest either. I think it's not Irish enough, if that makes sense. And I would like to see something back towards the shamrock and a strong, bold identity. But that's, as I said, that's not for me to decide. That's for the powers that be in the FAI.
It definitely seems to be the trend, though, right? That, like, the if you looked at the Euros, the fans were all wearing retro shirts. And I know that's not a new thing, but certainly there seems to be two trends at the moment. There's like the ultra modern, and there is the let's go back to nostalgia and the warmth. And I certainly understand the desire to go back to when the world is on fire and the pandemic is sweeping. So it makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of retro stuff around at the moment, and we're bringing out with this kind of polo shirt. You can probably see on me here with the 88 crest. So we're going to bring out a range in October, November, which is a really cool, interesting range. And it's not one that will be worn by the team, for example. But what I've imagined basically is we were in negotiations in the late 80s to do the FAI contract for the 1990 World Cup. And we didn't ultimately win that bid, but we did then win it the next time in 1994 World Cup. So what I've tried to do is I've imagined or reimagined, if you like, the Umbro designs of 1990 World Cup, where like the likes of England and Scotland and others wore Umbro product, and mashed that together what would have been the FAI crest at the time in the Irish colours. And that's a range, and it has obviously kind of more modern silhouettes and cuts and stuff like that and materials, but it will have that kind of 1990s look, which is still very strong if you get it on the right product. So there's a really, really cool, interesting range coming out in kind of October, which will it'll be available through Elvery Sports.
It seems like that's gone, sorry.
Everybody had that Umbro 1990 jersey in Wembley for the final, it seemed, more so than the new version. Or did Umbro reimagine the 1990 jersey for England this summer as well?
Obviously, once you're kind of finished with a contract, you can't remake the stuff as such. You kind of have you can team up, as we've done with there's a company called Score Draw who team up and do everything officially. So we will be bringing out replicas of the 1988 and 1990 jerseys for the FAI over the next couple of months as well. But you'll see a lot of kind of counterfeit ones online and stuff like that, but the point is you try and do these officially, obviously through the team. So the England ones that were around are really people find them on eBay, and you know, people find them in their attics and stuff all the time, as we all know. And you bring out your kid sized jerseys that you had when you were a little fella, and stick them up on eBay. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on with the England thing. But there, as you said rightly, there's a huge draw for people going back and picking up the older jerseys from maybe, well, England obviously would make sense. 1990, they got to the semi-finals, great memories with Gaza and all from their point of view. And likewise with Ireland, 88 shirts and 1990 shirts are always tin on the ground, because it reminds people of those great days under Jack.
So they are going to make a comeback then, and an official version of
those. Official. Now, obviously, Adidas would have made those jerseys at the time, so we don't do this obviously with Adidas. So the only thing that will be off it will be the Adidas trefoil, but everything else will be done exactly the same as was done previously, and it will be official product. Obviously,
is sales the only metric of success? Like, have you designed shirts in the past that you think are class and you're happy to stand over it? They didn't sell amazing ones, and then sometimes you're thinking, this, I don't know if it's going to sell, and then it sells like mad. Is there sometimes lag?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely times where there's times where you underestimate it, and there's times where you overestimate it. So I mean, I'm trying to think of examples, live examples, but you know, the 2016 shirt for the Euros, we knew it was a nice shirt and we knew it was strong, but that was That went off to scale. Like, I mean, it sold really, really well and much quicker than we thought it would. Now, there's also, you've got to temper these things with, like, we qualified for the Euro, so people were going to buy it possibly regardless of how good or bad it was. So sometimes it's hard to get that exact gauge on it. But, I mean, in regards to this blue jersey, for example, that we're looking at the moment, we put this up for pre-sale on, I think it was Friday, and already half have been pre-sold. So we reckon that, and this is a limited edition, obviously, there's only 2,000 of these going to go out there into the market. And with half sold online, and they're not even due to go into the stores until the 1st of October. But realistically, I think none will ever hit the shelves. I think they'll be gone before they're actually launch date, if you know what I mean. So they'll never be in the shops. And the only other metric of these things that I can kind of describe is it would have been when we moved into the Aviva, which was, I think, 2010, maybe, if I remember correctly. In the first game against Argentina, we ran this limited edition shirt, maybe 100 pieces, which had Ireland versus Argentina and the date of the game, et cetera, embroidered under. And then about 2 years later, we did a pink jersey with breast cancer awareness on it. And both of those were strict limited editions. And now, in value terms, if you've got a new one of those with the tags in the bag, they're selling for 3 and 4 times the original price on eBay, if you can find one. So the collector's items do, you know, plenty of people will open the box and take them out and wear them, and that's totally understandable. And a lot of people aren't buying them for an investment, obviously, but these things do, you know, up to quadruple in value over maybe 7-8 years.
Is there any chance of this blue jersey becoming our away jersey?
The plan is we are absolutely planning to wear the shirt. It's not going to be the away jersey as such. We're more likely to wear it. We're trying to wear it before the end of the year. And that's the kit's actually over with UEFA for approval, for match approval at the moment. Now, obviously, we do this all day, every day, with multiple national teams. So we know what needs to be done to get the sign off. So we're not expecting any sort of issue whatsoever with sign off. And then once we have the sign off, then we can schedule in what game it's going to be against. But that is literally TBC at this point. And with a bit of luck, we might wear it more than once as well.
Yeah. I mean, I would be all up for adopting blue as our away jersey for the next couple of years, or even a third jersey. Does that make any sense? Like the white, obviously iconic, big games in the past, but we could retire for like a couple of years, couldn't we?
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that. I mean, if you look at what a lot of teams are doing, obviously it's led, I suppose, to some degree by club football and teams now wear every sort of colour that, Liverpool wore blue a couple of years ago, which would have seemed, totally against what they would do with, because Everton are right next door. And so that broke down all that sort of stuff in terms of colours. I would imagine Celtic and Rangers probably won't decide to wear green or blue as their away kits. But apart from them, I think there's very few limits anymore. And I think if you looked at the Euros and looked at the different sort of styles and colours that, whether it's Portugal or England or France or whatever wear for their away kits, I think it's kind of all bets are off. You can wear to a degree what you want. But I think that in this scenario where we're talking about the FAI's 100th year in existence or the centenary, I think there's an absolute legit reason for wearing blue and highlighting that historical crest and just bringing something totally, totally different to the table. We've just got to get that message out there to explain to people why they're wearing blue.
Any chance of us getting a classic orange shirt at any point in the future?
I wouldn't rule anything out at this point. We like to try and mix things up. We've only actually ever done one orange shirt. So, and we all remember the game and obviously Jason McAteer's flying kung fu kick and all that sort of stuff and the defeat in Skopje in Macedonia. So it was an interesting shirt. And as we discussed before, that was actually the one that they all tried, that we, when we had that massive robbery in the warehouse that they robbed or tried to rob. So, we had a mixed fortune with the last one, let's just say. But I would like to certainly get that into the kit rotation at some point, because as I always say, I never see these things as political. Orange is 1/3 of our national flag. It appears all the time as a trim in the home and away shirts anyway. So I'd love to get that back in over the next year or two.
Listen, we wish you the very best of luck with it. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
It's Jonathan Courtney there, who's the man behind the new blue shirt.